Just a couple of quick things before we begin the actual lesson this morning. I wanted to inform the congregation of a couple of things. One, as we dealt with last week, we talked about praying for one another and how important that is, and hoping that we are continuing to do that, or if you forgot to do that this week, that you spend a little time doing that this coming week and looking at the words that are on the back of the board and back on the wall, in the foyer, all those things that we're trying to produce as individual Christians this year, and pray about those, or grab your directory and just look at the names and think of the things that you can pray on behalf of one another. And don't just pray it, but make sure that you let them know that you're praying. We're trying to make sure that we're being as encouraging as we can as we pray and reach out to one another. And along that line, I want to thank the congregation very much for the prayers that have been offered on behalf of Daniel and Rebecca and Benjamin. A little bit of bad news, but a lot of good news to go with that. But a little bit of bad news, he's been in the hospital the last couple of days with multiple infections, and they were concerned that he might have meningitis or something of that sort, and so they wanted to rule all of that out. All the preliminary tests indicate that that is not the case, that they could just treat what he has with antibiotics, but because of his size, they kept him admitted, and with a little bit of God's blessing in addition to what he's already done, they'll be able to take him back home, hopefully today, probably at the latest tomorrow. The good news, which far overshadows that, is day 20 passed yesterday, and so we praise God and thank him that they have reached that stage, at least as far as everything except name change and all of that. The other legalities should be behind them, and I know that's a huge relief for them. So we appreciate the prayers that have come on their behalf. I want to start this morning by giving you a list of names. And in this list of names, I want you to see if you can find the common bond, the things that they go together with them. Adolf Hitler, Idi Amin, Richard Nixon, Margaret Thatcher, Jack the Ripper. You know, things start looking like they make sense till you get to a certain point. Osama bin Laden or Liam Gallagher. Don't know if you know Liam Gallagher or not. He's a frontman, lead singer, vocalist, and guitarist for a British rock group called Oasis. Surprised me that he made this list. But he did. Any idea at all as to the commonality of that list? I mean, that's just kind of a strange list, isn't it? I mean, if you just picked out those world leaders or tyrants that you might be able to make some association, but then they throw in Jack the Ripper and Liam Gallagher, and there's a host of others that show up on that list over the years. Since 1970, that's a list that has been produced at Madame Tussauds London Wax Museum. All the visitors that go through that wax museum since 1970 have had an opportunity to vote on who they declare to be the most hated person that year. And those people all made it. You wouldn't think a lead singer from a rock group would have made the list with the rest of those. And they tell them either fictional or non-fictional characters. That they can vote on any character at all that should make the list. Hitler topped that list a lot of times. Osama bin Laden topped it several times in recent years. As you look at that, Liam Gallagher is a very derisive type of person. He speaks very badly about most anybody except the Brits. Slams the Americans regularly, so I don't know if that means a lot of Americans were voting as they went through the London Wax Museum, but he's just not a very nice character in his public persona, and I'm sure that's why he did end up making that list. I want to think about somebody that didn't make the list today. This is surprising that in all the years that they've done, I mean, since 1970, that there weren't enough votes, but maybe it's just because he doesn't have a wax figure in the museum, and so people don't think about him, or maybe people just don't think in general. But we're going to take just a few moments this morning to talk about Judas. No Judas on that list. I mean, the very mention of the name conjures up thoughts, doesn't it?
There are things that go through our mind very easily. You know, there's been different times in recent years where biblical names have been very common of children that are born, male children especially that are born, and they come up with those biblical names. I know all three of our children have biblical names. There are many others, Joseph and Jonah and Joshua, and we have a Jonah and a Joel here this morning, and a Samuel. And you think about all these different biblical names that exist. Josiah, even saw one Jephthah listed. I don't see many Jephthahs these days, but I've never seen anybody or even heard of anybody had any desire at all to name their new baby bouncing boy as Judas. I mean, it's just not a thought process that you would go through. It would be something normally that we just wouldn't associate at all. It's interesting because if you look biblically, there's other Judases besides Iscariot, the one that was the betrayer of Jesus. Sometimes referred to, it's interesting, isn't it, when it says Judas, not Iscariot. That's the way the author refers to the Judas that is not, to make sure that you don't get the wrong idea of who you're thinking about. Because if all it says is Judas, immediately the thought process is bad. Because obviously the Gospels were written after the events had happened, so everybody that's reading them already has an understanding of what's happened. Or you look even at the brother of Jesus, whose name was Judas. And we have an epistle recorded by his hand. And it's not called the book of Judas, is it? It's the epistle of Jude. Shorten that. What would be the purpose of that? I mean, there's no first and second Tim, you know, first and second Pete. Nobody else shortened the name as the books were written, except that there was that automatic association. I think that's why that happened, that there's an automatic association. If it said the epistle of Judas, the thought process would be wrong. We think of Judas that way. But who is he? And I really only want to look at two things out of his life. And really, there are two things that are outside of his life. Not really in his life, but two things from his life. Who was he? Judas Iscariot. That's his surname. We know that his father's name was Simon, the scriptures tell us. His name's Iscariot, probably because of where he was from. That may very well be a breakdown of the word man of Cariot, Iscariot. And so he's Judas of Cariot, and he's identified that way. We know that he was one of the 12, that he was appointed as treasurer of the 12, and that he became a thief of the very treasury that he was appointed to take care of. And so we associate, even before the betrayal, we associate different ideas with Judas that are less than favorable. But even when you think of that character, Judas, and you conjure up the thoughts, what does it take to cause a man to betray one of the people that he is close to, even physically close to, any kind of relationship with, other than just outright hatred? And the relationship did not seem to be one of hatred as they continued to walk. What would cause him to betray this person to such a horrible death? I mean, what would cause Judas to do that? Because there's some interesting things said about Judas. And normally as we think about him being the betrayer, sometimes we don't make all the associations, I think, of some of the things that are said. But there's some things that are said because of where he was from. If he was indeed from Cariot, then he's the only non-Galilean. One text I was reading gave six reasons why he may have betrayed Jesus. Why he may have betrayed. One says, because he was the only non-Galilean. He felt like an outcast. He never felt associated with the rest of them because he had come from a different place. And eventually, that caused such a distancing that it didn't create him the problem. Another one said, he very possibly had turned state's evidence, as we would call it. He only did it in order to save himself. That doesn't seem to fit very well with the rest of the story and the things that that transpired after that. Some said it was just purely the greed. I mean, he got 30 pieces of silver. That's equivalent for us today, give or take, of about $10,000. So if they gave him $10,000 to betray Jesus, then maybe it was just the greed. We know he was greedy as he would pilfer from the treasury. One writer said he believes he came to hate his inner self. because Jesus knew that self. You know, it's very easy to externalize who we are and the kind of person that we are, and yet you couldn't hide that from Jesus. We know that. And Jesus knew. When the others didn't know what was going on, and Jesus knew who was going to betray him, and Jesus talked about that at the table and told him to go take care of what he needed to take care of. Maybe it was that understanding that Jesus knew his heart all along that caused him to do that. One writer takes the position that the name Iscariot does not come from the two words that mean man of Kariot, but more from the Greek word that is very similar, which carries the idea of meaning dagger bearer. And that's only because there was a group of nationalists that were called by that term. And so his position is that they were very violent nationalists, and Judas was waiting for Jesus to do what he had hoped for him to do, to come in and bring the kingdom in and destroy these Romans that had taken over the Jewish way of life. And when Jesus didn't do that, then he turned him over to the Romans. One man said that he expected that Judas might have even been trying to force the hand of Jesus to do that. You know, if I can get the Roman guards to come in and seize him, now what's he going to have to do? He's going to have to fight for this kingdom. But even as that happened, you remember Peter drew his sword and cut off a man's ear, and Jesus healed him and said, that's not what this kingdom is all about. But as you think about all the different words, I mean, Jesus Iscariot, he's a friend, he's a confidant, he's a disciple, he's a treasurer, he's a thief, he's a traitor. How do you get to that point? How it must have broken Jesus' heart. But forevermore, if immortality was what he wanted, he got immortality. In the sense of name, immortality of name. People know Judas today as well or better than they knew Judas at that time. We associate the very name with betrayal. But I want you to look at what it says in Matthew chapter 27 and verse 5. So Judas threw the money into the temple and left. Then he went away and hanged himself. I mean, you think about the tragedy of that. The very nature of what he did. He went into the temple, threw the money at their feet. You remember from the story that they wouldn't take the money back in the sense of they said it was blood money, the Pharisees, and they bought the potter's field. And we're told that all of that blended in very well with the scriptures and the prophecies that have been told prior, that that's exactly what would happen. If you keep on reading, you discover some things about Judas. In Matthew chapter 27, you find out before Pilate even finished questioning Jesus, Judas was dead. Before Barabbas was released, Judas was dead. Before Jesus was scourged, Judas was dead. Before the crown of thorns was pushed onto his head, Judas was dead. Before they nailed him to the cross, Judas was dead. I mean, things transpired. It transpired so quickly. The passage says, and in the meanwhile, while this is going on over here, this is going on over here. But you think about Judas and what happened. And here's what I want to ask this morning. I want to ask one question that there's more than one answer to, even more than two answers to, that I'm going to give you this morning. But here's what concerns me. Have you ever just missed something that you wish you hadn't have missed? You ever think about that? I mean, just somewhere maybe that you had wanted to be and you just didn't get there and you missed it. And you said, somebody says, hey, did you get to see such and such? No, I missed that. I've used that phrase on numerous occasions. I remember even last year, I was really anxious to see one of the meteor showers. You know, it was one of those times when it was going to be a big meteor shower at night. You could go outside and sit outside in the dark and look a certain direction, and you were supposed to be able to see in the neighborhood of 2 meteors per minute on that particular shower. And so you think, I mean, we talk about falling stars, but imagine sitting outside for an hour seeing 2 falling stars every minute that you're sitting out there. That would just be incredible. I forgot what night it was. I read it the next day in the news about what an incredible meteor shower it was. Oh, I missed that. I wanted to see that. Have you ever done that? Something you wanted to see, something you wanted to hear, somebody you wanted to see? I missed that. There was that great occasion, and I missed it. Judas missed some things because of the choice that he made. And that's really what the lesson is. The lesson is what Judas missed, and don't miss what Judas missed. How important it is to make sure that we don't make the choices that he made and missed it. Think about Jesus on the cross. Why don't you turn to Luke chapter 23 for just a moment. And even prior to the cross, Judas is missing all of this scene. The disciples saw some of this. They weren't close. They were keeping their distance. They didn't want to be caught up in the thick of things and suffer the same fate that Jesus did. But they were witnessing some of these things. There's no question in my mind that they were hearing the crowds that were shouting, "Crucify!" And we know that when Peter denied Jesus, it was because he was there at the courtyard and he was keeping abreast at least of things. Because when he denied Jesus that third time, Jesus turned around and looked at him. He was seeing the proceedings, though they weren't really full supporters of Jesus at that time. And so those that mocked him and those that spat on him and those that were responsible for whipping him with the cords and the whips that they whipped him with, those that slapped him in the face and those that took the crown of thorns and knocked it down on top of his head and those that nailed him to the cross. Judas missed all of that scene, obviously. He wasn't there for that. But here's what he missed. Luke chapter 23, because I would tell you far more important than witnessing any of that. Luke chapter 23, verse 34, says of Judas, or Jesus, "And Jesus said, 'Father, forgive them, for they do not know what they do.'" Judas missed the forgiveness that Jesus Christ came to provide. You want to talk about tragedy? As tragic as it was that all those things happened to Jesus, and that is tragedy unimaginable to most of us, it's a greater tragedy, Jesus himself said, to lose one's soul than it is to lose one's life. Jesus said that. Told his disciples that. Be careful. It's possible to save your life, but I'm telling you, you better have the right relationship with God rather than the right relationship with man. If you save your life and lose your soul, what have you gained? He says what you need to do is have the reverence and the respect and the fear of the God who can destroy both the body and the soul. He said that's the concern. Judas missed the forgiveness of Jesus Christ. Can you imagine? I mean, there are people that occasionally will say things almost like that it's not even a forgivable thing. I mean, Judas, that was so heinous. How could you be forgiven of that? Was it heinous? It was. But you know, every time we sing a song like "I'm the One," is that song not piercing? Peter said that God wanted everybody to be saved. Everybody. Those that were physically driving the nails through the hands and the feet of Jesus Christ, Jesus understood forgiveness was what they needed as well. I know there's a part of you and me that would just, it would be difficult, especially in the moment. How difficult would it be to have the love and the forgiveness and the mercy and the grace that Jesus extended while he was being nailed to the cross? but he wanted everybody, and he wants everybody to be saved. Nobody to perish, not even Judas. And Judas missed the forgiveness of Jesus Christ. It was his choice to die unrepentant. He didn't come back to Christ, though he could have. I mean, the forgiveness of God is just incredible. It doesn't matter what you think about regarding what you've done. That the God of all creation was willing to send his Son to hang on a cross and die just so we could go home. That's amazing. That is great love. Great forgiveness. And it's not based on who we are. It's not based on what kind of life we've lived. It's based on the grace of God. And that's where the forgiveness comes from, because nobody deserves it. We understand that. But how close did Judas come? What does it take to receive the forgiveness of God? What does it take to receive the forgiveness of God? Because I would tell you, Judas got really close. He just didn't do all that he needed to. Matthew chapter 27 and verse 4, Judas acknowledged his sin and his wrong. When he went back into the temple to take the money to the Pharisees, he said, "I have sinned. I have betrayed innocent blood." He understood that he had sinned. He didn't say, "You know what, I did a bad thing." He acknowledged the sinfulness of what he had done. "I have sinned. I betrayed innocent blood." Look back at Matthew chapter 27 for just a moment. Verse 23 says, "Then Judas, his betrayer, seeing that he had been condemned, was remorseful." Wait a minute. He was what? Some versions say he was filled with remorse. There's a regret here. He didn't just acknowledge it. He felt badly about it. I don't think that it's fair to say he felt badly because he had been caught. He felt badly that he had done it. Now, we understand from other passages that God tells us if the remorse is the right kind of remorse, it leads to something different than what Judas was led to and what he did. But he felt badly about it. He acknowledged the sin, and he felt badly about the sin. Remorseful over his sin. I would tell you that there are church buildings today all over the world filled with people, or have people in them at least, that understand the truth of Romans chapter 3 and verse 23. That all have sinned and fallen short of the glory of God. There are people in buildings just like this, probably all over the world. There may be somebody here today that acknowledges the rightfulness and the truthfulness of that verse, that we have sinned before God and sees the sin in their own life and feel badly about it. There are some who feel badly. They feel remorseful. They don't like the fact that they've done some of the things that they've done. They feel the remorse for that. But though they may not go out and hang themselves like Judas did, they may walk away from the presence of God and from the opportunity to take that third step, which is to accept the forgiveness of Jesus Christ. To come to Him in obedience so that His blood can cover those sins. It isn't enough to acknowledge and to feel remorseful. Repentance is the step that follows the right kind of remorse. And Judas missed that. He missed that. Secondly, in John chapter 20, three days after Jesus dies and after Judas dies, 3 days, Jesus meets with His disciples, of whom I'm confident had Judas come back to Jesus, would have been there with them. And in verse 19, then the same day at evening, being the first day of the week, when the doors were shut where the disciples were assembled for fear of the Jews, Jesus came and stood in the midst of them and said, "Peace be with you." They didn't have peace prior to that. They were scared. They were in a world that had been turned upside down. They didn't know what was going to happen. They didn't know what they were going to do. None of that. And Jesus comes in and says, "Peace be with you." And He's going to tell them, "I give you my peace." Judas missed the peace of God. That's what happens when we have that relationship. I mean, that eluded Judas. That apparently eluded Judas even prior to these events. But in John chapter 14, Jesus promised that peace to His disciples. "My peace I give to you." The world will never understand that kind of peace. We know that. That's what Paul says to the Philippians. He said, it's just this peace that is unbelievably difficult to understand. It's beyond the reasoning process of looking at things from a worldly perspective. But we can have that peace. And what's it all about? Judas hanged himself. And I would tell you, that's just one in many cases of the lack of peace in this world over the decisions that are made and the circumstances that people find themselves in. Suicide is the 10th leading cause of death in this country, ahead of homicide. So you just think about how many killings you hear about a year. Homicide is 13th. Suicide is 10th. It's the third leading cause amongst 15 to 24-year-olds. I would tell you, there are a lot of people in this world that do not have peace of mind. Suicide, obviously, is no solution. But it's indicative, at least, of some of the problems that exist. How many people around us do not have the peace that God promises? Some 38,000 adult suicides on a yearly basis. That's more than vehicular accidents take last year. Or at least in 2011. I say last year, the statistics were from 2011. 36,000 were taken in vehicular accidents in this country. 38,000 died by suicide. 8.3 million adults say they contemplate seriously suicide as a solution to their problems. So only 38,000 take their lives, but 8.3 million are willing to say that they contemplate it seriously. There is no peace in the minds of many in this world. I think sometimes we miss that around us. Felix Powell, to show you how easy it is to externalize peace. You might have to be pretty old to remember this song. Matter of fact, there may not be anybody here old enough to remember this song when it came out. But you remember the song, "Pack Up Your Troubles, in your old kit bag and smile, smile, smile. That's actually a song from 1915. War song. Written by two British brothers. One wrote the lyrics, one wrote the music for it. It was voted at one point the most positive song that had been written to date. Felix Pau, one of the authors of that song, the composer, took his own life. It isn't as easy as just pack up your troubles in your old kit bag and smile, smile, smile. There's a lot of people living without peace. It was missed by Judas. It's missed by many today. The Greek word for peace that is used here, that is used in Philippians chapter 4, it carries the idea of to set at one. Does that make sense? To set at one again. In other words, it's saying something that's kind of jumbled up, or things that are divided, or there's some kind of dissension, but to bring it all back together. Set at one is what it literally means. That's because it's all about relationship. When I'm one with God, like Jesus was one with God, there's total peace. That's what we're trying to do, is to, as ministers of reconciliation, as Paul called himself, we're trying to restore peace. Blessed are the peacemakers, we're told in Matthew chapter 5. I think that's making peace between man and God, bringing them back together, reconciling them. When we are in the place where we belong, we have peace. Judas missed forgiveness and Judas missed peace. He didn't condemn himself. This is the good news of the story. He did not condemn himself at the point of betraying Jesus Christ. Heinous act? Absolutely. Terrible thing to do? Absolutely. Nobody condemns themselves at the point of doing what they're doing if God gives them a moment beyond that. They condemn themselves, as Judas did, by making a choice not to come back to God. Because that's where we all started. We all started with Him. We all walked away. That's the point of Romans chapter 3. We all walked away. The good news? You have a choice. I have a choice. Want peace? Get forgiveness. There is no greater peace than in forgiveness. You want forgiveness? Get Jesus. That's the solution. Your choice, my choice. Don't miss what Judas missed. The forgiveness and the peace of Jesus Christ. If you're not a Christian, pray that you take care of that this morning. This is one more chance that God has said, I don't care what you've done before. All of that, every bit of that can be put behind you. Every bit. And He says, and I can forgive you for what you've done, and I can give you the power to overcome whatever caused you to do what you did. We just sang the song, Faith is the Victory. Don't you love the words of that song? I love the verse that talks about trotting on the ground that all those saints before walked, shouting triumphantly. He says, that's what He wants from us. Make it right with Jesus Christ. Give yourself over to Him. Allow yourself to be buried in baptism based on that faith so you can be raised in newness of life. If we can help you do that, hope you'll do it today. If you want to continue to study, please ask us. We'd love to continue to study. For those of us that are Christians, may we live our lives in such a way that we are always, always going back to God so that we can have the forgiveness and the peace that follows. If we can help you, let us know while we stand and sing.